Lyle Presler, punk rock legend and music industry vets. Jim Shear, most tenured VJ in the history of music television. Two men on one mission to talk about music. And it all starts now.
Ahoy, everybody. My name is Jim Shear.
And I'm Lyle Presler.
And welcome to the show. And we still don't have a title for the show.
We do not.
Will it come to us?
You had some good ideas. I'm not sure. You know, you want something snappy.
But so do you want something literal, like Lyle and Jim?
Well, the advantage to Lyle and Jim is that everybody knows it's Lyle and Jim.
Right.
And therefore you get, you know, more opportunities out there. They don't just say, you know that guy who's on that show called Music Matters? And so I think we do need to have something, but I'm not sure. And I have to admit that my problem I have with all this stuff is that anything I come up with, I automatically think is trite. I've always had this problem. That's why I could never write lyrics, because I'd write lyrics and then go, oh, come on.
Now, do you have any tattoos?
No.
That's why I have never gotten a tattoo.
Okay.
Because I thought that I would hate it two
weeks
later.
Right. Well, you know, it's funny. When I was in Minor Threat, this was at the dawn of the tattoo era, where most people who had tattoos were bikers or prisoners, former prisoners, or military people. I mean, seriously. And they all had, you know, the basic blue tattoo. And then there was these guys, this really cool band from Austin, Texas called the Big Boys. And they got some of the first really, really colorful, cool Japanese-style tattoos. When I say Japanese-style, because the Japanese were doing lots of color. And I remember seeing them. And so from that point on, we would sit in a van and we'd go on these long trips and we'd say, so what could we get? What could we get? And I swear to you, months and hundreds, if not thousands of miles, none of us ever came up with anything to get that we would want on our bodies for the rest of our lives. Now, Brian Baker apparently abandoned this idea. And his comment to me once, when I'd seen him after many years and he had like almost sleeves, his comment was, well, I guess I can't play racquetball with the boys now. which was hilariously funny to comment about it. But I will say that, as far as I know, three members of Minor Threat do not have any tattoos, and Brian has enough for all of us. It wasn't that I didn't want one. I did, but, I mean, we would go through everything from, you know, brand names, Ready Kilowatt, you know, Coca-Cola. I mean, but it never happened. And the only people that I knew that had tattoos that made sense was Black Flag. You know, everybody got the four bars on their upper arm. Except the problem is, even people who were in the band for like 5 minutes got the four bars.
Right, okay.
And I was thinking like, well, you know, I don't know about that. But
see, but you guys had a cool logo. You could have the black sheep. That would be a great tattoo.
I know, and I've met people over the years who do have the black sheep.
And I've thought about getting the black sheep.
Oh, okay.
Well, but I never did.
Well, the only problem is you might have to pay a royalty to the artist who designed it. No. But I thought about that, but I kind of think that getting a tattoo of your own band is a little bit... I don't know. It just seems... It's like wearing your own t-shirt. You know, I don't know. It's like... It just seems
weird
to me. But
it wouldn't say Minor Threat.
No, I know. But it would clearly be.
Okay.
It would clearly be. I don't know. I mean, at this point, I think I'm just way too old for it. You know?
Yeah.
But it is funny because I'll go to the beach or something and I'll look around and I would say fully... 80% of the people, men and women of all ages, have tattoos. And I've actually felt at times that people might be looking at me thinking there was a religious reason why I don't have one.
Well, what's crazy now is growing up, I used to always draw sports caricatures.
Okay.
And I still do that. I actually got paid for drawing some sports caricatures in the last couple of weeks.
Really?
Which I'm happy about. But no basketball players back in the day had... tattoos.
Right.
Now, every basketball player has tattoos.
That's
so right. Not only do you have to look up the picture of the basketball player drawing, but you have to look up their freaking tattoos now.
The tattoo, right. Because otherwise, people might identify them from the tattoo. Yeah, who's the guy, the white guy who played on, was it Miami, the Heat? who has all the crazy...
The Birdman.
The Birdman. Man, the first time I saw that guy, I was like, whoa,
yeah,
that
so
is some
if I drew
stuff.
The Birdman, I would just be splashing color all over the
right,
place.
Right, exactly.
So that might actually be easier.
Exactly.
So this conversation, I think, leads us to believe that we're never going to have a show name.
No, probably not. Probably not. I yeah.
So let's go from tattoos to the Oscars.
Absolutely. The Oscars.
Do you watch the Oscars?
I do, but I
did
think...
I make you watch the Oscars?
No.
Were you going to do something else on Sunday night?
No. Not at all. Not at all. I always watch them. Ultimately, the awards and all awards, all art awards are completely ridiculous in my opinion. There's just no... You can't tell me that you can take Christian Bale in this movie... about this, directed by this, produced by this, and distributed by this, and compare him to Steve Carell in that movie, you know, it just doesn't work. It's a complete false, it's a false choice that people are presented with, because it'd be one thing if you could sit there and go, well, let's have five actors all act the same role and see who does the best job. But you're not doing that.
Right.
It's just apples
well,
and oranges.
It's kind of like what Chris Rock said in his monologue. They should have black Oscars. Mm-hmm. And why in the heck do we divide men and women?
Well, men
it's
and women.
It's not track and field.
Right. I like that. That was great.
So let me go down the major winners. Sure. Film of the year was Spotlight.
Mm-hmm. Didn't see it.
Best actress, Brie Larson.
Did see that. Did see Room.
I didn't see Room.
Room is an unbelievable movie.
Really?
Absolutely unbelievable. It is, it if nothing, it's the value of storytelling and acting. It shows you that you do not need to spend a lot of money on a movie. You just need to have a great story.
No, it was a mom and a boy in a room?
Basically, I don't want to ruin it for everybody, but it's the mother and a young boy who have been imprisoned in a single room. And the boy has lived his entire life in the room. He was born in the room. He's never been outside the room. And it's their struggle to escape. And then the real story comes in. I mean, I'm not going to give anything. They do escape.
You ruined it, Lyle.
No, they do escape. Everyone knows that. But what happens then is, how do you now adjust to the world?
So best actor, Leonardo DiCaprio in The Revenant.
He was going to win.
Best supporting actor, Mark Rylance, Bridge of Spies.
That's an interesting one.
I was pulling for Rocky.
Everybody was. But let's not forget that Rocky won Best Picture when it came out. And he was the writer, the producer, the director. He was Rocky. Rocky was Sylvester Stallone. So he's already gotten something.
And then the best supporting actress is Alicia Vikander from Danish Girl. Did you see that?
Did not see that. Regardless of what anybody thinks, regardless of her performances, her story is really amazing. I mean, this is a Swedish girl. She was acting... she was actually turned down by the major Swedish academies of acting, which produced people like, you know, produced some of the great stars, and also Ingmar Bergman was very much involved in. She ended up in London, and she actually, her flatmates in London were Iconopop.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. So,
wow, I didn't know that.
And for someone to come on the scene, not as a child, as an adult, and do a bunch of movies and get this recognition immediately, I mean, you're obviously dealing with tremendous talent. And also good fortune.
So besides the major winners, I wanted to talk about Chris Rock's monologue and then the music moments of the Oscars. And by the way, they weren't branded as the Academy Awards. Do you know anything about this? Like, they were just called the Oscars.
Well, yeah, they've started doing that because everyone referred to them as Oscar.
Yeah, you know? So are they no longer called the Academy Awards?
I mean, it's the Academy.
Because on my channel guide, it said the Oscars.
It's the Academy of... Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, right?
Yeah, well, I always thought it was the Academy Awards, and it was
right.
the street thing to call it the Oscars.
Well, there's always that joke about the old-timey Los Angeles movie critic. You know, Oscar's in town, and he's well-dressed and looking for dates. But yeah, I guess they've decided that's... It's sort of like when Federal Express became FedEx.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, so Chris Rock's monologue.
Yes.
I loved it. I thought there was it was 10 minutes long... maybe around 6 or 7 minutes, he kind of lost a little bit of steam.
Mm.
But then he came back strong at the end. I wish he finished with a 1-2 punch. He finished with we're not allowed to ask women what they're wearing.
Right.
But listen, all the guys are wearing the same thing. If George Clooney was wearing some crazy green thing with a swan coming out of his ass, we'd say, what are you wearing?
Right.
And people started laughing. I think he needed one more punch.
Well, and what about the woman who won for best costume for Mad Max? And she was wearing that denim jacket, and everyone was looking at her like she landed from Mars, you know? The monologue... Listen, first of all, I love Chris Rock, and I understand that Chris Rock and many African-American entertainers have a very interesting relationship to industries that they're involved in, and I've always appreciated Chris Rock's candor about that, without becoming sort of cartoonish. He was placed in a very difficult position. I mean, let's just say that there's very few people who could have successfully done that.
Now, he was named host before any of this controversy started.
Absolutely.
No black actors or actresses nominated in the major categories. Right. So he could have easily made a statement.
He could have bowed out.
Like he said, don't do it, Krista.
Yeah.
Why are only unemployed people telling you to quit your jobs? Yeah. So he
rose to the challenge.
It was serendipitous that he was the host of this Academy Awards.
Absolutely.
Or this Oscars, sorry.
And the interesting thing is that a lot of people think that that was some sort of cynical choice that the Academy came up with to address the issue.
Yeah,
but that's
let's get
not,
Chris Rock.
That's
yeah.
not it. I mean, he was going to be it regardless of what the nominations would end up being. And so I think he was placed in a really difficult position. I think he did a great job with it. I like the fact that he... tried to be kind of even-handed about the whole thing.
Yeah.
And tried to, you know...
Because he went after Will and Jada.
Well, I thought that was great. I thought it was great that he talked about that because, you know, there are a lot of wrinkles in this. I mean, we can't get into the whole thing, but there's a lot going on there. And some of it is mere shadows, and others of it is real fire and real light. And I think that the only problem I had with the telecast... which is the normal problem, which is you get the introduction, you get the monologue, you get the fun and games, you get a few early big-time awards, and then you have this hour and 40 minutes in the middle, which is just a disaster. There's just nothing going on. They're cutting to people. By then, they've started going to the bar. By then, the seat fillers are coming in and sitting down because they pan and like, oh, get off that. There's nobody there. And this year, there were a lot of stars that weren't there. There was not a high level of star quality in the audience. I mean, think about it. Brad Pitt wasn't there, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
George Clooney wasn't there. There were a lot of people missing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why that is. Maybe that was deliberate. Maybe it was accidental. You never know. So this hour and 40 minutes in the middle was hard to deal with. The only thing I would say about Chris Rock and the way it went down, though, was that I kind of think that he should have done that 10 minutes, and then that should have kind of been it.
Okay.
I don't think
Are you speaking to those other skits that happened?
The other skits, I didn't think they were terribly effective for the most part. I mean, everyone says, oh, Tracy Morgan, you know, ha, 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 ha. But I didn't think that that really worked all that well. I thought the...
Because the monologue was the mic drop. That's
right,
it.
Right, exactly.
And then if you keep talking about it, you're lessening the monologue.
Right. And I think also that... You got to be. It's so difficult. I know there were a lot of comedy writers involved in this, and I know that a lot of them wanted to get their little jokes in there, as would always be the case. And I know people worked really, really hard because they understood that there was controversy and they were trying to do something. I think unfortunately that if you try to carry that through that long a telecast, it does start to feel like, oh, come on now, let's just quit. And I also think that there's maybe a little bit of unfairness when you start saying things. One of the early ones, wasn't it, here comes a white person and an even whiter person.
Right.
And it's like, well, wait a minute. I mean, those people don't have anything to do with this. I mean, you know, I thought his monologue was insightful. I thought it played both sides of it. I thought it cut real good.
Mm-hmm.
Made people feel kind of uncomfortable. That was good. But unfortunately, I got the feeling that everything was uncomfortable all the way through. And it sort of felt like it started to get kind of...
Because as an actor or actress that is nominated in these categories, and they were interviewed about it, what do you say?
What do you,
you could say? I agree. There, yeah. there needs to be more diversity in these categories.
Right.
But I'm in Hollywood. Right. I'm an actor. I got an ego. Right. You better believe I should have been nominated in this category.
Absolutely. And the other thing to remember, and again, this does not, I'm not trying to address the issue of diversity in Hollywood or the opportunities. But let's also remember that every year, how many movies come out in Hollywood, alone in Hollywood? 130? And they all have best actor. I mean, they all have supporting actors and lead actors and lead actresses and supporting actresses. And they all have writers and they all have producers and they all have directors. And most of those people never get anything, including the next job.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a certain amount of it that says, and again, we also know that if you got five slots and you're nominating people, who's six who didn't make it? And who's seven? We don't know. We have no idea who six and seven were. Or 8, 9, 10, 11, mm-hmm. 12, 50. But any actor who's in, I would believe that almost any person who's acting in Hollywood says, the most important thing for me is to get the next job, is to get the job mm-hmm. and get the opportunity and get the paycheck. And so I don't want to get too far into this, but like Will Smith, dude, and he made reference to it. You got $20 million for Wild Wild West. Okay, there's a point where we go, okay, there's tens of thousands of people out there who struggle to try to even get a job. This dude can walk into any studio tomorrow morning and make any movie he wants. They will pay for it. So there comes a point where you gotta like step back from the whole thing and take a snapshot of it and go, this is a tough business. It's based on money. Why did Leonardo DiCaprio win? Well, is it because he's that great? Maybe. But it's also because he spent years in big movies delivering performances. At some point, the industry says, okay, mm-hmm. we'll give you the statue. Because we sort of have to. And it doesn't have, it's not a reflection on his talent. It's just a reflection on the realities of the industry. Paul Newman went for how long in how many roles? You know, HUD, The Verdict, Cool Hand Luke, The Hustler. Never won. Finally, they gave it to him for Color of Money, which was not his best performance by any stretch of the imagination. But they had to.
That happens at the Grammys, too.
Yeah.
Is it all right? You finally earn it.
Yeah, you've got it. You know, you've done a lot. So.
What was your take on the Stacey Dash cameo?
That thing went over my head because I wasn't aware of the controversy surrounding her statements before.
Well, beforehand, she said that we should get rid of Black History Month.
Right. And BET.
So I got that, but I didn't understand.
Well,
to me, it was a bad seventh grade talent show moment.
It was.
Where these kids think that they're hilarious, and then you get them on stage, and you're like, what did you even mean by that?
Well, she actually had, I give her credit because she actually said, I think, I got neither applause nor boos, which meant that it just went right over everybody's head. Like, nobody knew what was going on.
But for me, who likes to stay in tune with pop culture, I just felt, I was frustrated. I'm like, why don't I get this? Am I missing out on something?
I know.
Am I not on Twitter enough?
Mercifully, it was so short that we could sort of look at each other in the living room and go, oh, okay, whatever. You know, we'll look that up later. The other one was the PricewaterhouseCoopers thing. With the three Asian kids.
Yeah.
And I was just sitting there going, well, I mean, immediately something in my spidey sense said there's something wrong here.
Yes.
Like, as soon as they walked out, I was like, oh.
Yes.
Oh, what are we doing here? And then it didn't immediately dawn on me the whole notion of child labor. You know, they made your iPhones or they made your phones. And it was pointed out later on that was kind of that's another joke that I'm sure some comedy writer thought was really great.
Yeah, I mean, that has to translate
You got to have some setup for that to work.
Yes.
And it just seemed to me, and of course, now you can get into all this commentary about like, well, if we're really talking about diversity, why are we making fun of Asian kids? You know, I don't know that they were making fun of Asian kids. I don't think that was it. But
you have to make it clear that you're not making fun of Asian kids.
The context just didn't work. And I think that's part of the problem. Like you said, it's drop the mic. You know, we're done. Mm-hmm. Don't try to like extend this.
So we missed talking about the Grammys. Mm. Do you have any quick thoughts about that?
No, I don't think so. I think it pretty much ran along the lines of what, I mean, between your predictions and my predictions, it kind of went that way. I didn't think there was a lot of surprise there. I mean, Kendrick Lamar's performance was amazing, tremendous. Although I would like to go back to the Oscars, and I want to say that the Lady Gaga performance, what did you think of that?
Yeah.
I just think it's not a song.
Yeah, I'm...
It sounds like somebody wrote something on a piece of paper and they just decided we're going to put music behind it.
Well, going back to the Oscars, we forgot to talk about the music moment. So there was performances from Sam Smith, Lady Gaga, The Weeknd, and Dave Grohl. Although Dave Grohl did Blackbird and the Memoriam package.
Right. Blackbird, by the way, was the first song I ever learned to play on the guitar.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
You know, my little Yamaha classical guitar.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. I still sort of know how to play it. It's like one of those muscle memory things.
No, it's... Yeah. They should have had you up there.
Yeah, no, not really.
Because at one point I thought, well, he's just going to play, but then he sang it too.
Well, I was worried that he wasn't going to sing the hard part. But he did at the end. He sang the sort of hard part where he has to go, you know, I was afraid. Because he stopped the first time he didn't do it. And I was like, oh, he's not going to attempt this. Especially after Sam Smith, who was horribly flat.
Well, and his song, Writing's on the Wall, won Best Original Song.
I know.
I hated the song.
Well, it's not a song. As most as...
It's I can do this now because I've attained a certain level in the music world, because he's like, I can sing at a lower register, now I'm going to sing at a higher register, here's my falsetto. I'm like, this isn't a song.
No, it's not a song. And if you actually look, I mean, unfortunately, in my mind are trapped all of the James Bond theme songs. But particularly the early ones are fantastic. I mean, there's some wonderful. I mean, Goldfinger, Thunderball. These are tremendous, tremendous songs. I'd say it's pretty hard to write a really stirring James Bond theme. Unfortunately, that's not one of them. And unfortunately, his performance was really, really flat. And then to add insult to injury, he goes up to accept the award and he relies on Ian McKellen to tell him something which is not true.
Yeah.
And he's not the first openly gay person to get an award. Melissa Etheridge got
Elton John.
Elton John. But Melissa Etheridge won the Academy Award. Stephen Sondheim won the Academy Award. So just in the music realm. And I think he's embarrassed by it.
But in defense of Sam Smith, he did say, even if it's not the case.
Well, no, that was so good.
I'm glad he said that.
The caveat was good. It was definitely good. But the other thing is, I would like to say is, like, what's astounding about Sam Smith is how much weight he's lost. I mean, it's just unbelievable. And it's funny because
I miss my plump Sam Smith.
Well, you know, it's funny. My daughter used to say that he looks like a character from Minecraft. she calls him Blockhead, and so when she was watching the early part of it, she saw him, she's like, oh, he doesn't look like Blockhead or Minecraft anymore. I said, well, you know, he probably feels better about himself, so yeah, that's good.
I'm sure one day we'll get back to Blockhead Sam Smith.
It generally works that way. And I thought The Weeknd was, you know, good. I think he's always good.
See, I thought that should have won.
Yeah.
Because that was a hit.
That was a hit. But it was also from 50 Shades of Grey. Which is a punchline in almost every single radio program.
Right.
So, you know.
Because you said Lady Gaga's song didn't feel like a song. I'm saying Writing's on the Wall from Sam Smith didn't feel like a song. When The Weeknd got up there,
I said,
this feels like a hit.
Yeah.
This should win. But like you said, it was from 50 Shades of Grey. So let's take a break. And when we come back, Lyle and I will talk about the music happenings of the week.
It's the 88th Academy Awards. It's the 88th Academy Awards, which means this whole no black nominees thing has happened at least 71 other times. Okay? You gotta figure that it happened in the 50s, in the 60s. You know what I mean? Like, you know, in the 60s, one of those years, Sydney didn't put out a movie. I'm sure there were no black nominees some of those years, say 62 or 63, and black people did not protest. Why? Because we had real things to protest at the time, you know? And we had real things to protest. You know, we're too busy being raped and lynched to care about who won best cinematographer. You know, when your grandmother's swinging from a tree, it's really hard to care about best documentary, foreign short.
We are back on the show currently with no name. A show may that may never have a name.
Yeah.
But that's okay. You
know, people, the show with no name.
Yeah. All right. So now it's time for the music happenings of the week. People still talking about Kesha versus Dr. Luke. This happened 2 weeks ago. Let me break it down for everybody.
But actually, there was something this week, too, that came out. But we'll get to
okay,
that.
Okay, so... If you're not familiar with the whole story, Kesha is under contract with Sony, specifically its imprint, Kemosabe Records, which is run by super producer Dr. Luke. So she's responsible for making 6 more albums under this contract. She wants out of it. So
how many has she done? 2? Was it an 8-record deal?
No, I don't know. It's everything I read said she needs to make 6 more.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
I'm assuming it was an 8-record deal. She wants out of the contract. So in 2014, she sued Dr. Luke to void it, accusing him of sexually, physically, verbally, and emotionally abusing her. Mm. Dr. Luke then countersued for defamation and breach of contract. Mm. So a couple weeks ago, in a New York court, they denied Kesha's injunction. Mm-hmm. Now, according to Sony, Kesha can work with whomever she likes and doesn't have to enter a studio with Dr. Luke. However, there is one catch. This label, Kemosabe Records, must approve all potential collaborators.
Right.
So Dr. Luke could be a jerk if he wanted to.
Sure.
Taylor Swift has donated $250,000 to help with Kesha's legal fees. And Kesha has also received support from Fiona Apple, Kelly Clarkson, and Lady Gaga, who stuck up for Kesha on social media, saying that she is very, very brave.
And Jack from Fun and Bleachers.
Yes.
Well. Yeah.
So you're a lawyer.
Yeah, yeah. No,
what's your take on this?
Well, it's interesting, and you summarized it perfectly. This is a suit to get out of a contract. This is not a civil suit against Dr. Luke for abuse. That's the grounds that she's citing for letting her out of the contract. The complication here is that, and it becomes more and more obvious, is that Kemosabe is an imprint that's marketed and distributed through Sony. So strictly speaking, it appears, and I haven't seen the document, so I don't know, that somehow or another, Kesha thought it was a good idea to sign an 8-record deal with Kemosabe, which, I mean, I don't know who was representing her, but that sounds crazy to me. There wasn't any options or outs. Or maybe there are options. Maybe there was a 2+6 option kind of thing. That sounds like an old school contract to me. In any event, the preliminary injunction, what people should know about this, I mean, there was a big deal made of it because she was crying in the courtroom and she lost. And let's just understand exactly what's going on there. What Kesha's lawyers wanted to do was to say, we think we're going to win the lawsuit. But the lawsuit is in the future, and she wants to record now. So will you, judge, issue an injunction against her having to fulfill her contract and let her start recording now and release some music, pending the outcome? The way you would prevail on to get such an injunction would be to show the judge that you are almost definitely going to win the case. It's got to be sort of a slam dunk. Judge has got to look at the evidence that's going to be presented and go, you know what? I don't think you can lose this. So I'm going to go ahead and grant this preliminary injunction. The judge didn't like what she saw, apparently, and said, I'm not doing this. We're going to go to trial. You're going to have a chance to present it. So it doesn't mean that Kesha lost, mm-hmm. but it means she lost that attempt to sort of get out of it early. Now, then Sony comes back and says, well, you don't have to record with Dr. Luke, which I don't really understand, because if she signed a Kemosabe, now let's take something else. Then just the other day, Sony says, well, we can't let you out of the contract anyway, because we're not a party to your contract with Kemosabe. Well, now, wait a minute. Okay, so they're saying on the one hand, we don't have anything to do with that. We can't let you out of a contract that we're not a signatory to. But on the other hand, you don't have to record for him. You can record for us. Now, there's obviously a relationship there. The question is, what relationship is there? And I mean, I don't know. But it sounds a little fishy. I mean, so interesting thing, you read in the news, you heard that when Sony said they'd allow her to record with somebody else, Kesha's people went back and told the court that was, quote, an illusory promise, which is a specific legal term. And what's interesting about that term is what it means is, what we all think it means, it's a fake promise. You're not really going to do that. And even if you let her record without Dr. Luke, you might not promote the record. You might not do anything. You might bury it. Or you might lie about it. You might say, yeah, sure, you can go in the studio, and then you stay in the studio for 3 years. The illusory promise is actually that the court could not enforce any of it. So even if Sony said, yeah, come record with us, it's no big deal, you'll never see Dr. Luke again, the court would not be able to enforce. You couldn't run back to the court and say, they didn't give us tour support. They didn't pay for a video. They didn't release a single. So that was their argument. Now, I think Kesha won this round. And the reason she won was because of the public outcry.
Okay.
So when you have artists who are actually signed to Sony Entertainment coming out and voicing support for her, you have put Sony in a very bad situation here. Now, the reason why is because, okay, let's look at the two possible outcomes of this trial. They win, okay? If they win the case, they now have to force Kesha to record. In my experience in the record industry, you can never force anyone to be an artist, ever. Mm-hmm. Okay, you can say, go write some songs, deliver a record. Well, sorry, got writer's block. My girlfriend dumped me. You know, I feel bad, but not bad enough to write a song about it. It doesn't work that way. The second thing is, even if they win, Dr. Luke is forever tainted, which means that Kemosabe is forever tainted, and it's always going to be a problem. And honestly, if you've got a 16-year-old daughter who wants to record and Dr. Luke wants to record her, are you going to feel terribly comfortable turning her over to him? I mean, not saying that he did anything.
Right.
I have no idea. Now, if they lose, if Sony loses the case, it's even worse. They lose Kesha. They encourage their other artists to bring similar kinds of suits to get out of contracts if they don't like them, and they've lost Dr. Luke altogether. Sony's in a very, very bad position here either way. So I think they never should have gone down this road. And I can imagine there were voices in the room saying, you know what, just let her go. Let her go. Let's just bury this thing. Let's walk away from it. The problem is they felt like it might encourage some of their other artists to do it, and also it's money and it's pride.
Mm-hmm.
And pride is a big thing. What is that, Pulp Fiction? That's pride fucking with you? That's pride fucking with these people, man.
You're
gonna
feel
serious.
A sting.
They're going to feel the sting. And so their big issue now, though, is that all these artists and all the public has come to her defense, right or wrong, they have. And that puts a lot of pressure on Sony because someone pointed out if they were to release a record by Kesha, the scrutiny on the promotion, the marketing, and the treatment would be so great, would be unprecedented. I mean, no one's ever bothered to look at how people do things. And my experience from record companies is just basically there's a lot of reasons why people get attention, don't get attention, get marketing dollars, don't get marketing dollars. It's very complex, but people would see it one way, and they would see it as attacking Kesha. So they're in a bad situation.
Because I'm interested in Dr. Luke's defamation suit. Because like you were saying, who's going to want to work with him? Because it's a business where you say, I was sexually abused by him. And it's like, well, no one's going to want to work through it, even if someone just says it.
Absolutely. And let me just say this. And you've been in and around this business for a long time, and I have. And let me just say that, and again, I want to be very, very clear. I don't know anything at all. But it doesn't sound outlandish. Okay? If you told me that there's a casting couch, and there's this, and there's that, and maybe there's something going on, it wouldn't surprise me. I've seen really awful things that were completely inappropriate and really wrong. On the other hand, doesn't mean it was happening. The problem with the defamation suit is, and there's a maximum in law that says the best defense, the only defense against defamation is the truth. So if, for instance, they lose the case, Sony and Kemosabe lose the case, then that defamation suit just goes right out the window. Because how are you then going to walk into a court and say, no, no, it's not true? And they're going to go, well, wait a minute. She just won a case on the grounds that it was true. So these cases are tied together. I think obviously he has a case. If she's wrong, if she's actually concocted this, then that is horrible. And if, you know, unless she can show a defense of the truth.
Because I couldn't even imagine the number if she concocted this.
Oh, my God. I mean, how would she even
He's
do
like,
it?
You cost me billions of dollars.
Right, right. And, of course, the other reality of lawsuits is it's fine to – I could win – you know, Jim, I could sue you for $100 million. You don't got it. It ain't going to make any difference. And what am I going to do? You can't – most people don't understand that, like, for instance, if I won a judgment against you for $100 million, it doesn't mean I can take away your place to live – your food off the table and your your car. I can't take everything from you, just like in a bankruptcy case. You can't throw someone out on the street. So how would you ever pay me? It wouldn't. I mean, it's a pointless victory because it's not. I'm not going to get the money ever. Mm-hmm. So maybe Dr. Luke could win a judgment against Kesha. Like, we don't know what Kesha's worth is. We don't know what her future worth is going to be.
All right.
Who knows?
Well, thank you for your take on that.
I just don't want to be involved in that, man. They always say, like, if you're in court, you blew your job. Like, what I learned in law school was if you end up in court, 90% of the time, you did a bad job. You should never end up in court. That should never happen. And unfortunately for these people, it has.
Another story that's got a lot of buzz following the Super Bowl is going to get a lot more buzz as the tour date approaches. The Miami Police Union is calling for a boycott of Beyoncé's Formation Tour, which kicks off on April 27th, because her Super Bowl performance glorified the Black Panthers and the music video had an anti-police message.
Right.
The Nation of Islam has offered to work security.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, first of all, I think this is a tempest in a teacup, frankly. I don't know anybody who was thinking about going to Beyoncé's concert and then said, well, if the police union says for me not to go, I shouldn't go. I don't think that's realistic. I think that's symbolic. I think the problem here, and this gets to a wider issue, I mean, we didn't really talk about this, but, you know, I kind of feel like there's appropriate venues for expressing certain kinds of political viewpoints, and I don't think the Super Bowl halftime is one where you do that. Because I don't think it works. I mean, I think I could make an argument against it, not on the grounds of civility, on the grounds that it doesn't work. Like, most people watching that did not see the Black Panthers.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of did, to be honest with you. I was like, wow, that looks familiar. But I didn't see the X. Okay? And I don't think most of the columnists that I've read saw either of that. I think they're lying. And I think they learned it around the water cooler the next day and went and rushed to their computers to type the stories. I don't think it was effective because it went over everybody's head. And I think that the problem is, you know, and there's been a lot of talk about Black Panthers. I read Saul on Ice, okay, you know. And I know that the Panthers were a very complicated entity. There's a lot of things that went on. But the fact of the matter is, to most people, and certainly to the police, the Black Panthers conjure up images of gun battles and cops being killed. And cops being targeted. And it seems to me to be a pretty stupid thing to do, to take something that subtle and throw it out there and then not expect a backlash about that. I don't think it has. I don't think it's going to matter. I mean, the police have never said they're not going to do their job.
Speaking of the NFL, MIA is taking on the NFL in her new song, Boom ADD. MIA was fined $1.5 million for flipping the bird in her Super Bowl. Well, she was a...
That was 2012, right? She was with Madonna?
This was 4 years ago. Yeah. So she was a featured performer in Madonna's halftime show.
Right, right.
The fine was later upped to $16.6 million as restitution for the public exposure she gained from the stunt.
Right.
There was a settlement reached between MIA and the NFL, and the terms remain private.
Right, in 2014, right? Was that when the settlement was reached?
I don't know when the settlement was
reached. But it wasn't recent. It was at least a year ago. Yeah.
So here's a clip of the song.
Yeah, you try to stick around. Do you pick a rhyme? Let you into Super Bowl. You try to steal Madonna's crown. What the
there you go. So to me, this seems 4 years too late.
Yeah.
But maybe with the legal proceedings and whatnot, she was only allowed to speak about it now? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, usually the terms of any kind of settlements like that are forever sealed. They're never supposed to come out. They do, but they're never supposed to. Yeah, it seems late, and it also seems very pedantic. And the other thing is, it's like, I don't know, it's like when you come to a settlement, you need to just move on. Like, you don't want to keep revisiting it, because... I don't know. I mean, would the NFL now turn around and sue her again, re-sue her, or claim some breach of a settlement? I don't know. It does seem just too late. And also, like, why do I want to hear a lawyer explaining a case that not that many people even know about?
Right. So earlier this year, Birdman and Lil Wayne squashed their volatile beef. At its best, they shared a father-son-like relationship. At its worst, there was an indictment for murder conspiracy.
Oh, right. That's right. He supposedly hired someone to kill Lil Wayne, right?
On his tour bus. Right. Anyway, Lil Wayne and Birdman recently appeared on their first track together since the drama. Here's a snippet of the song called Hate from Manny Fresh, which also features Juvenile.
We back at it, Daddy. Niggas be hating on me, man. 2016, summertime shine.
Let me tell you the type of shit they say about me.
Now, though the beef is squashed, reportedly Lil Wayne is still suing Birdman for delaying the release of the Carter 5. I don't know the details now, but he originally sued for $51 million.
Wow. I'd kind of question like how serious that lawsuit is, though. I mean, you know, in general, your lawyers would advise you to have as little contact as possible with the opposing party because, you know, you might say something, it might be recorded, might end up like, hey, man, you know, I really didn't really don't really want to sue you. I mean, I mean, we inflated the amount. It's really not $51 million. You know, you don't want that out there. I don't know. That's weird. That's a weird one.
So this next story is of interest to me. Weezer's White Album comes out on April 1st, and producer Jake Sinclair, who has worked with 5 Seconds of Summer, Pink, Fall Out Boy, and Taylor Swift, is apparently a super fan of the band, and he wanted Weezer to get into the mindset of their first two albums. So what are your thoughts on going back to the well?
Well, let me just say this. I mean, I remember, like, I was working at Caroline Records back when the first Weezer demo tapes were going around. And I have that demo tape somewhere on cassette, which is the song, which is about five of the songs from the first record.
From the Blue Album.
From the Blue Album. I mean, and I played that thing one summer, like I was obsessed. And my A&R people were trying desperately to get Weezer. We were spending enormous amounts of money to go out to Los Angeles and we were agreeing to things that Caroline would never agree to, like producers that would have cost us just enormous amounts of money. And needless to say, Geffen, actually, our parent company was Virgin, and I tried to get Virgin because I realized at a certain point we weren't going to get Weezer. And so I called the people at Virgin. I'm like, you guys got to sign this. Somebody's got to sign this. Somebody in the family's got to do this. And believe it or not, they had some A&R people go out to see Weezer play live and hated it and refused to move on it. And so Geffen ended up signing Weezer. And then, of course, the first videos came out. Spike Jonze, mm-hmm. right? The single no edit video. And the song sounded very much the same as they did on the demo tape. And I loved them. And obviously they blew up. Buddy Holly blew up. It blew up. And it's funny because Matt Sharp, who was the bass player at the time, was sort of the spokesman for the mm-hmm. band, and he would spend a lot of time in our offices, and he came in afterwards, after they had already signed to Geffen, and they'd started to blow up, and he was talking about The Rentals, which was his other side project, and I remember walking up to him when he came in one day, and I said, don't you just wake up every morning, look in the mirror, and thank God you didn't sign to our record label. Because, you know, Geffen poured a lot of money into it, and I love Weezer. I don't know about this notion of putting them in mind of. I mean, when you say them, you're really meaning Rivers.
Rivers.
I don't know. I don't know how you do that. I'm not even sure that that's something that he maybe want. I don't know. Does he want to do that? Like most artists, they want to move on, and he has moved on. I don't know. It'd be interesting to see. I mean, I'll always listen to it.
Because Rick Rubin did it with Metallica.
Yes, he did.
You try to get them into that frame of mind. Is it right. possible to, I mean, maybe not necessarily get into that frame of mind, but get into that spirit?
I don't know. Because one of the things that you always ran into in the record business is, normally speaking, when you discover a band, they've been doing that for a long time. Like, they've been working on those songs for a year or more. And they always talk about the sophomore slump, the second record. And generally the reason for that is because they had a year and a half to write the first record, and they've got 6 months to write the second record. And unless they have tons of songs from the first period that they can just carry over, they're usually pressured. And then they've also got money that they didn't have before. They've got fame that they didn't have before. And how do you how do you get them back? You know, I remember in those days of alternative rock when people were offering these gigantic contracts, Veruca Salt got offered $2 million to sign to, again, Geffen, I believe. Mm-hmm. And my comment at the time was, well, that's that. Like, I mean, they've been in Chicago in a one-room apartment together writing these wonderful songs and playing them. And now they're on a private jet. Like, it's hard. And I don't know, but then again, it all goes to what you want to do. I mean, does Rivers want to go back and try to revisit some of that? I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah, he's been visiting the beach a lot. Yeah. He got on Tinder to get in that adventurous state of mind.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, so maybe he'll do it then.
So we'll see. And then you had some birthday shout-outs.
Yeah, some birthdays today. Today is March 1st, and we have a number of birthdays. Justin Bieber is 22.
Happy birthday, JB.
He's feeling 22. Kesha, who we've discussed, is 28 today. Roger Daltrey, the singer of The Who, is 72.
Wow.
Harry Belafonte, damn, is 89. The guy who's, we talked about Rocky, Eye of the Tiger, the singer from Survivor, Dave Bickler, is 63. Ryan Peake, the guitar player from Nickelback, is 43. And Frédéric Chopin would be 206 years old today.
Wow.
Yep.
206.
So play a few of those interludes and then celebrate his birthday.
And then before we go to break, the number one album on the Billboard 200 this week is 25 from Adele. Number one song on the Billboard Hot 100, Work from Rihanna featuring Drake. Mm-hmm. Number one album on iTunes is I Like It When You Sleep, and there's a whole other part of that title, but I just want to read that part.
Okay.
I Like It When You Sleep from the 1975.
Right.
Number one single on iTunes is Work from Rihanna, and the number one song on Spotify, Work.
Wow.
From Rihanna. There you go.
Good for her.
When we come back, Lyle and I will have our music picks of the week.
Work, 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 work. To me, I be work, 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 work. You see me do me dirt, 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 dirt. There's something better. Work, 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 work. When you walk a line, 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 line. I'm in the cafe, my ta, 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 ta. Dry me, I desert you. No time to have you lurking.
We're back. Jim Shear with Lyle Presler. Time for our music picks of the week. I'll go first. I was torn as to which song I should pick. I was toying between the one I'm going to play you and Light Tunnels from Macklemore and Ryan Lewis, the opening track off their new album, This Unruly Mess I've Made. The song is all about their award show experience at the Grammys. It's a fascinating narrative. But it's over 6 minutes long.
Okay.
So I think it needed some editing.
Okay.
So I'm going to spare you of that today.
Okay.
Instead, I'm going to play you a song that's not necessarily new, but I think it may come off of their new album. It's a song called Emergency from Iconopop.
Okay.
And I Shazammed it. I don't know if I was at a restaurant. I don't know if I heard it on a commercial. But from time to time, I'll go back to my Shazam songs and then I'll download them. So here is Emergency from Iconopop.
So you wanna party, so you wanna dance. You better know someone that fucks one of our friends. You wanna get higher, shake that ass. Spin it round and round and round and round like that. I put a little twist in my hips.
Here we go.
Kiss on my lips.
Here we go.
Ice on my wrist, cause I'm hot and I'm dancing.
Here we go.
Cut that romance and
here we go.
Cancel your plans and
here we go.
Girls hide your mans, cause I'm hot.
Emergency from Iconopop.
I like it.
That little horn.
Yeah, I like the. They're so cheesy and so great. I've always liked those girls. I love it. It was such a great song.
Yeah.
Because it was just so ridiculous. Like, everyone wanted to know how you drive your car into a bridge anyway. You know, like, how do you do that? Like,
I asked them about that.
Did you?
And I forget, because my wife would always, whenever we listen to the song, she's like, you can't drive your car into a bridge. And they explained how you could drive your car into a bridge. I think when you're actually on the bridge and then you...
Well, you could also, if it's one of those sort of overpass bridges, they always have the embankment.
Yeah.
You could drive up to the embankment. But that would be... You'd have to really want to do that. Like, that would... You'd be dead, probably. Like, because then you careen back down into the roadway.
But yeah. That song reminds me of like a one-hit wonder song.
Yeah, it does.
It could be used in a Six Flags commercial or something.
Oh, yeah, with that dancing guy. Mm-hmm. The dancing guy and the bald-headed guy in the suit.
And like I said, I don't remember where I heard it, but I Shazammed it, and I thought, oh, Iconopop. So the song was released last year, came out on an EP, but I'm assuming it will come out this year on some type of Iconopop album.
Well, I decided to go. I was kind of here or there. I mean, I was going to actually go with Alyssa Cara's Here. But I decided to go with 21 Pilots' Stressed Out. And the reason why, well, you're going to listen to it, but the reason why is I just think it's an interesting band. I think it's a very interesting band. And we can talk about why.
Okay, here goes. Stressed Out from 21 Pilots.
I wish I found some better sounds no one's ever heard. I wish I had a better voice that sang some better words. I wish I found some chords in an order that is new. I wish I didn't have to rhyme every time I sang. I was told when I get older all my fears would shrink, but now I'm insecure and I care what people think. My name's Blurry Face and I care what you think. My name's Blurry Face and I care what you think. Wish we could turn back time to the good old days when the mama sang us to sleep, but now we're stressed out. Wish we could turn back time to the good old days when the mama sang us to sleep, but now we're stressed out. Used to play pretend, give each other different names. We would build a rocket ship and then we'd fly far away. Used to dream of outer space, but now they're laughing at their face, saying, wake up, you need to make money. Yeah. We used to play pretend, give each other different names. We would build a rocket ship and then we'd fly far away. Used to dream of outer space, but now they're laughing at their face, saying, wake up, you need to make money. Yeah. Wish we could turn back time to the good old days when the mama sang us to sleep, but now we're stressed out. Wish we could turn back time.
Stressed Out from 21 Pilots.
Yeah, I mean, and maybe this is a case, too, of like me just liking certain elements of it. But I like the idea of the band. I like the fact that this dude plays piano and then he's got a drum, just a drummer.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've seen clips and like he gets up from the piano and he runs around, he does stuff, and then he gets back on the piano. And I think it's really cool. I also like the lyrics because I've always felt that if you can take really odd lyrics and make them work in a song, then you've got, there's something going on in your mind. Like, my name is Blurry Face. I mean, like, what in the world is that? And yet somehow it kind of works in a way. The first time I heard it, I could have sworn he was saying different stuff. And then when I figured out what the lyrics were, I was like, wow, this is interesting. I mean, it's like that glimpse into someone's mind to try to like figure out why did they choose this avenue of expression? Because there's lots of other ways you could do it, which would be very obvious and very straightforward. And yet he decides he's going to like do this sort of odd thing. And that's what I think it's intriguing about.
And it's surprising that it has become a hit on pop radio.
Very surprising. Very surprising. And I don't know what that is. I mean, that's one of those things where, you know, maybe if the teenagers just glom onto this somehow and they propel it. I don't know.
I remember driving in the car having the pop station on and this song came in and I'm like, really?
Really?
Like, yeah. 21 Pilots is pop rated. This is right. Crazy.
Yeah, it's very strange. And I, you know, and of course those things become sort of self-fulfilling prophecies too. Like once they get a certain amount of traction, they kind of just, you know, they just go.
But their album debuted at number one when came out. So right. it makes sense. I'm torn on the group. I love their drummer.
Mm-hmm.
Their lead singer, kind of weenie-ish.
Yeah, he's
to
a little,
me.
He's
like,
a little weenie.
Like, hey, like, I wish it could turn back time.
It's a little emo.
Like, turn back time? Like, dude, you're selling out MSG. You don't want to be driving in a van playing fire halls.
Well, it's kind of Adele when we were young. What are we talking about here, man? Like, seriously? No, I agree with that. But he's got that emo thing going. And
high energy, though. I love it. Yeah, high energy live. I like him jumping around all over the place. Another problem I have with 21 Pilots is that the drummer will trigger something. Yeah. I'm like, no, man, I want you to have some more players in the band.
Well, and maybe they will, you know. But, I mean, we've discussed this before. It's like, that's very expensive. and you know, and there's a, there, you know, there's restraints. You know, there's constraints on what you can do at a certain point. Maybe if they get more popular, they'll sort of incorporate that. I don't know. It also sort of reminds me, I mean, some of it sort of reminds me kind of in a weird way of like sort of like soul coughing, kind of like this sort of weird,
yeah.
Like there's a lot of beat things going mm-hmm. on. It's kind of little things. But you know, I'm not going to make any real big claims for it because I don't know what it's going to be. Because they do different things too, so I don't know. But there's something about it that kind of hits me a little bit.
When we come back, we are going to play another exciting round of Ask Lyle.
80,000 plus people watching right there, and this is Ricky the Dragon Steamboat's cup of coffee in the big time, yeah. Cup of coffee in the big time, because he'll never get closer than now. I am the Intercontinental Heavyweight Champion, and I will remain the Intercontinental Heavyweight Champion, and Jersey Animal Steel on the outside will be no factor, yeah.
All right, and we will conclude today with another exciting round of Ask Lyle.
Ask Lyle.
First question, what do you think of Guns N' Roses reuniting to perform at Coachella?
Yeah, I mean, I don't, I think we've had this conversation before. I don't begrudge anybody reuniting. I mean, that's up to you. It's like, if you want to do it, do it. Even if you want to just do it for the money, it's acceptable. I don't know why we need that to happen.
In the festival setting, can you go on at 4 o'clock in the morning? Because Axel, his famous thing is he goes on when he wants to go on.
Right.
Can you do that in the festival world?
Well, I don't know, but I will say this: it's like the problem I would have if I were on the side of booking them would be what am I getting? Like, you come to me and you say we're going to do this. And I say, great, that'd be great. People would like it. But that's the wild card. Like, what are they gonna? Are they really gonna do it, or is it gonna be one of these things where somebody doesn't show up? I mean, you know, there.
Could you imagine that?
Well, because
It is night two, so it's not gonna end Coachella,
right?
So if people are bummed out, they're like, I can't believe they didn't show up. They still have a whole nother day of festival.
Well, yeah, and frankly, that would probably be more of a story than if they do actually play.
Okay, so my next question is, how often do you play guitar?
Oh, not often. I mean, when you say play, like seriously play?
Oh,
I mean,
like pick it up.
If I see a guitar lying around, I pick it up and play something.
Now, what will you play?
Well, I might play Blackbird. I don't know, you know. I might actually go, dee-dee-dee-dee. You know, I'll just play a few chords, maybe try to remember something. I mean, the problem I have is that I've learned so many things and forgotten all of them. It's almost fun because I can go back and just pretend I never learned something and learn it again, you know, and I'm like, oh, yeah, right.
And then my final question in Ask Lyle, will any second wave punk band ever get into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Second wave. You mean America?
So right now, Sex Pistols and Ramones are in the Hall of Fame. Do we see Black Flag, Bad Brains, Minor Threat ever getting into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Well, because Green Day did, right? And that's third wave?
I guess that would be third wave.
Third wave.
But I don't necessarily think of them as a...
Well, they did.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they did.
If they don't have that huge mainstream success,
right,
then I don't think they get into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Do I think that? I will tell you this. I know that in the meetings there have been mentions of various art bands, including Minor Threat. At some point, someone's brought it up.
So who needs to get in to sort of open the floodgates for other punk bands?
I would say that probably... Well, two things. One, I would say there needs to be another first line band that gets in. So you got the Sex Pistols, you got the Clash, right?
Mm-hmm. And the Ramones.
So maybe you almost need another one. But maybe
to sort of open.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I mean, but then I think like I start thinking like who would that be? And I don't have any idea. It's not gonna be the Damned. It's not gonna be the Buzzcocks. It's not gonna be, you know, I don't know who that would be. I don't know if there ever will be floodgates there. I really don't. I mean, I think it's possible that you could put in Black Flag and not put anybody else in ever.
Because I think if Black Flag gets in, then Minor Threat gets in.
Yeah, but I don't know that it necessarily works that way. Like, I could, in my opinion, if you were only going to put one of those bands in, it should be Bad Brains. That would just be if it was only one. If you only got one band, that's it forever. You put Bad Brains in.
Wow.
But then again, I could also see Minor Threat getting in and Black Flag getting in and Bad Brains not getting in. I mean, because you don't know how, you know.
See, for me, I would love Minor Threat to get in, but I don't think Minor Threat gets in unless Bad Brains and Black Flag get in.
Yeah, I mean, that's possible. I think the thing about it is, though, that you have to remember that, suppose we said to you tomorrow morning, you're now a full voting person in the room on this stuff. Yeah, you will come in. You'll come in with your little book of the things that you feel from the past should get in.
Mm-hmm.
But you're also really going to be thinking about stuff that's maybe only 10 years old or 15 years old that you think should get in. So there comes that point where you can lobby for the older stuff, as everyone else in the room is going to be doing, and maybe you can get something through the door, but then you're going to start to move on. I mean, remember, time keeps ticking.
So my spinoff question is, say if Bad Brains, Black Flag, or Minor Threat got into the Hall of Fame, would they perform at the ceremony?
Well, I think if tomorrow morning, if it was Bad Brains, the answer is yes.
Yeah.
If it was Black Flag or Minor Threat, the answer is no.
Well, thank you once again.
Thank you.
For competing in
Ask Lyle.
So for Lyle Pressler, my name is Jim Shear, and we will see yins later.
So long, farewell, I'll be the same goodnight.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen, Elvis has just left the building.